Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Good morning. This is Talking Animals. My guest today is Jill Rappaport, the award-winning reporter who's appeared on the Today Show for more than two decades, focusing for the last several years on presenting pet, particularly pet adoption pieces, as well as an array of animal welfare stories. We'll speak with Jill Rappaport presently. Meanwhile, I want to let you know that WNRF's Fall Fun Drive is fast approaching. If you're a fan of Talking Animals, we ask that you consider making an early pledge to support us. One way to do that is donating via our tip jar on the Talking Animals page found on WMNF.org. Or you can just email me, Duncan, at WMNF.org, and I'll be happy to handle your pre-pledge directly. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief chat with Stephanie Downs, co-founder of Fix It Foundation, which seeks to address pet overpopulation through various means, including research projects and a nationwide program that helps needy pet owners receive funding to have their animals spayed or neutered. We spoke with her a couple years ago, learning about Fix-It's mission and approach, and we'll get a short update about it, including a significant project underway in St. Croix. Also later in Name That Animal Tune, we'll be giving away a pass for a tour of Big Cat Rescue, the sanctuary in Tampa, housing more than 100 big cats. Right now, though, let's get to our discussion with Jill Rappaport, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Jill Rappaport to Talking Animals. Good morning, Jill.
Hey, Duncan. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, are you kidding? Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored.
Wow. All right. Well, flattery will get you everywhere, Jill. But anyway, so looking at you and your career right now and your love for animals and concern for the welfare, it's pretty delightfully obvious that it's didn't just happen recently. It's a lifelong passion. So let's find out a little bit about those early years. What kind of a kid were you?
Well, always, Duncan, obsessed with animals. Grew up with a lot of dogs, and one of these kids that would always bring home the unwanted pet, the wandering pet in the alley. I'll never forget one New Year's Eve. I was playing in the backyard, and I found a little mouse, and unfortunately, the little mouse had gone up to heaven, and I brought it home on my hand, and my mother was looking at me with this little dead mouse in my hand, and she was in a little shock, and I said, "Mom, I kissed it, hoping it would come back to life." Well, she almost fainted on the spot. She called the doctor and said, "My daughter just brought home this little dead mouse and actually kissed it. Do I have to worry?" And he said, "Mrs. Rappaport, are you drunk?" He was so concerned. So I was always obsessed. I was hoping Sleeping Beauty would kick in and bring this mouse back to life.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with movies like National Velvet, The Pie, That Amazing Horse, Timmy and Lassie. I remember it. I think I was 7 years old. I'm really dating myself now, but I rang up in those days, and we're talking a few decades ago, Duncan.
Oh, yeah.
I rang up quite a hefty bill. It was $342 in those days. I remember because my parents reminded me of it for many, many years after, trying to reach Timmy from Timmy and Lassie. Then it was the actor John Provost.
Do you remember? Oh, that's
the little
funny
boy?
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to tell him how lucky he was to have such a wonderful dog like Lassie. So I've always been just obsessed with dogs, horses, cats, whatever. And, to this day, I mean, my four-legged fur angels, they're my best friends and my lifeline.
Well, Jill, I guess one thing about that last story is the $300 question, perhaps, is did you ever reach Timmy?
No, what happened was I called every John Provost in the Los Angeles directory. And then I started, just reaching out to names that sounded like Provost. I had a long-distance bill because we didn't have the services we have today.
Sure.
For those calls. And I said, I'm trying to find, the guy that plays Timmy on Timmy and Lassie. Half the people hung up on me, but they knew I was a kid, so they engaged in conversations, and thus explain the big phone bill.
That's hilarious. That's great. Well, so Jill, as you moved into adulthood and you know, launching your career, how big of a role did animals play in your life at that point?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I've been on the Today Show. Next month marks my 22 years on NBC's Today Show.
Wow, congratulations.
It's incredible. I'm now so fortunate and blessed to be able to do these stories for NBC Nightly News now as well.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started, I was the entertainment reporter on the Today Show. And, you know, literally, it was the greatest job in the world and certainly one of the most coveted. I was on every red carpet imaginable for decades, you know, the Oscars, the Golden Globes, the Grammys, and got to sit down with every great star. And Duncan, when I did it, I really had a wonderful job because they were true stars. I had interviews with Lucille Ball, Audrey Hepburn, Paul Newman. You know, I've sat down with George Clooney, Barbara Streisand. And, you know, it's amazing because today, a lot of the celebrities are famous for being infamous. So when I did it, I only sat down with true great screen legends. But I have to say, as great as it was still a job. What I do now is a mission of my heart. It's my oxygen.
Sure.
You know, everything that I've ever dreamt about doing, I don't feel it's a job at all. And they say if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And I really am the luckiest lady of labor that I know because I get to do what I love every single day. And I remember incorporating it into my, quote, job when I was entertainment reporter because I found it to be a great icebreaker. I remember sitting down with Russell Crowe when he had just finished A Beautiful Mind, you know, that amazing film.
Yeah.
And, you know, Russell was an interesting guy. I found him to be fascinating and wonderful, but it wasn't like you could just sit down and shoot the breeze with him and he would just naturally open up and be warm and engaging immediately. You know, you had to work for that.
Yeah, not an easy interview, by all accounts. Yeah,
exactly. But I remember the second he sat down, I said to him, "So, how's Honey?" And he looked at me and he goes, "How do you know about Honey?" Honey was his horse that he absolutely loved. And, you know, I read all about him and, you know, he is a big animal lover and he was just so impressed that I knew about Honey. And we started talking about horses. We started going down this direction of our love of horses and how great it is to ride and what a great release it is. And I'll tell you, it led into the most wonderful interview with him that led into the film and his career. But it was like going through the back door of something he really, truly loved and didn't expect from a reporter.
Sure.
That I ended up walking out through the front door and getting an amazing interview. And that happened with Nicole Kidman. We talked about horses. You know, dogs. I remember with Drew Barrymore, a huge animal advocate.
Yeah.
You know, I'd whip out pictures of my animals. I mean, it was always a wonderful icebreaker with true animal advocates because we all know we're a breed of our own, all of us. And it's, you know, when you're an animal lover, we're in what I consider the luckiest club in the world and hopefully a club everybody should be a member of. But it really is a bond that only animal lovers have, and it's a connection that automatically bonds you with people, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like you say, it's sort of a direct path. If people share that thing, they can instantly connect, even if, you know, let's say, again, it's Russell Crowe, a little bit difficult often to speak with by most, you know, interviewers' past accounts. But yeah, you make that connection, suddenly you're chatting like old friends.
Right, and Robert Redford, he was on the cover of my book, People We Know, Horses They Love, and that was really the turning point in my career. That was my first book, and it became a New York Times bestseller with Redford on the cover. It benefited Pegasus Therapeutic Riding, which at the time, Clea Newman, Paul Newman's daughter, was heading up. So I had a wonderful chapter in there with Clea, Paul, and Joanne. I love to say Paul and Joanne.
Yeah.
Stopping names. Joanne Woodward, Paul Newman. And that really was the turning point because that book, I had the top celebrities in the world. You know, we have Robert Duvall in there, Dennis Quaid, Richard Gere, you know, I had Hilary Duff, I had Christy Brinkley, you know, doing her, you know, cutting and on cattle in Montauk, Gisele Bündchen before she was with, you know, the famous football player.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was really a wonderful collaboration. Oh, Morgan Freeman, incredible. I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, "Jill, when I'm on a horse and I'm riding by. I look up at the sky and I say, God, it's a good day to die. Like, that's how happy people are in the battle.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dennis Quaid said, I love the way the world looks from up here, meaning in the saddle.
Yeah.
The way he looks out on his Montana ranch. And that was just such a wonderful book, if I do say so myself, because we really got to see stars in a way that we've never seen them before, completely away from the red carpet, but really in their happiest, most serene moments.
Yeah.
On their horses, at their ranches, looking out over mountains, fields, streams. Richard Gere, you know, in New York, you know, he loves Appaloosas, and he and his wife have Appaloosas, and just to see that compassion towards animals and
yeah.
a connection towards animals. And it was really a turning point for me in terms of combining what I did for a living and what I love and live for, meaning
yeah.
animals. So that was the collaboration that sort of got me on the path. And then ultimately it was my dog, Jack, completely changed my life.
Absolutely. I was going to say that as much as the first book really sounds like a turning point as you describe it, I mean, it seems like another perhaps equally significant turning point was seemed like kind of everything in your world professionally, personally, otherwise changed with Jack. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Jack and how did he first enter your life?
Oh, Jack was just and I'm looking out over his little headstone right now in this little beautiful field with an arch. And Jack was my beautiful little German Shepherd that came to me actually through a neighbor. I was renting a home out on Long Island, and I had two rescue dogs at the time, and I've always rescued. I mean, I've never been to a breeder or a pet shop in my life, and I always would, you know, find a dog and make sure that it, heaven forbid, wasn't someone else's, if he was never claimed or she was never claimed, and we would do extensive searches, and then they were mine. And
yeah.
Jack was a little puppy who had wandered off, and this neighbor knocked on my door and said, does he belong to you? We always see you with your two dogs. We assume you're the dog lady. And I said, oh, he's so cute. And he was so sweet. He was, we think he was 10 weeks old. You know, the woman thought 6 weeks old, but his ears, you know, German Shepherds, his ears were still flopped over to the side. They hadn't, you know, stood up yet.
Yeah.
And I went to all the vet clinics out here and all the animal agencies to make sure no one was missing a puppy. And we spent a good 3 months doing an extensive search because can you imagine how heartbroken someone would have been?
But of course.
He literally turned out to be, I think, just the wandering puppy who was dumped, you know, like left alone and wandered off. And Jack was the sweetest, most amazing little dog. He was a very timid dog for being a German Shepherd. He was kind of like, I know I'm a shepherd, but, you know, I'm a shepherd in a lab's body, you know.
Like no,
he
was,
he wasn't overly, you know, outgoing. He was a little shy, and it could have been because of his beginnings. You know, he was found on the side of a road when this woman brought him to me. But Jack ended up, you know, he was with me for many, many years. He was my best friend, like all my dogs, and he loved the horses, and he would, when I was riding, he would ride alongside me. You know, he would be on the ground riding next to me, running around. And at 11 and a half years old, he came in one day limping. And I thought, well, you know, he is 11 and a half, and he is a German Shepherd. But he never really had arthritis. He never had any issues. And, you know, about a week later, he wasn't going away. And I thought, well, I had him, you know, I always put all my animals on Cosequin. I had natural supplements. And I thought, well, you know, probably should take him to the vet. And I looked down at his leg and I saw a little bulge in one of the legs and my heart stopped because I had been there before with my previous dog, Shiner, my beloved Shiner, the pointer that found in the alley behind CBS News. Actually, Brian Williams brought the puppy in. He was the local anchor with me at Channel 2 News. And he said, can you believe this puppy was dumped in this alley? And of course, Shiner ended up with me too.
Jeez.
So, you know, I just had a sick feeling, and the horrific news was Jack had osteosarcoma. Mm-hmm. I didn't bother doing a biopsy because I'm a firm believer that if he had, the vet felt very strongly that it was bone cancer, and I didn't want to have him go through two surgeries if I ultimately had to, sadly, amputate his leg.
Yeah.
I took him to all sorts of alternative therapies. You know, we tried everything, and you know, with cancer, you're really running against the clock, and it's a very frightening situation. And while he was in one treatment, they let him jump out of the cage, and he fractured the leg. Can you imagine? So at that point, it was either, heaven forbid, you know, put him down, immediate euthanasia, or amputation. And you know what? The options are absolutely stomach-turning, but the vet at the time, my wonderful oncologist for Jack, Dr. Jerry Post, said, there is so much more life in this dog, Jill. I know he will do great, and I know it's limited to his leg. And we did a complete bone scan beforehand to make sure that the cancer hadn't spread. And thank goodness it hadn't. And, you know, you're sick to your stomach. You don't want to do it, but you also want to give your dog a chance to live out his life to the best of his ability, and you don't want to lose him either. So we did the treatment. We did the amputation, followed by around many rounds of chemotherapy. And Jack, literally, first of all, he was supposed to be in the hospital for 3 to 4 days. And the first day, they said he'll do fine on three legs because he had basically been holding the leg up for, you know, many weeks because of the, you know, the cancer. But it's different because after the surgery, it, you know, they've lost their balance. And so I had to teach him how to walk again with a sling. And it was a front leg, and that's 60% of their bearing weight is in the front. But I'll tell you, within 3-4 hours, he was doing great. And I would hold him, and then I found out I could slowly remove the sling, and he would be great on his own. Not to say occasionally he wouldn't fall, but he really got the hang of it. Well, by the next day, I could just tell he wanted to get out of there. He wanted to be out of the hospital. I stayed in a place, you'll love this, Duncan, the only place of its kind then, where you were able to sleep in the same room with your dog after the surgery. You know, they had a little recovery room, and they wheeled him out to me, and I was able to sleep by his side. So when he woke up, I was right there with him, and I was able to, you know, give him his medicines with the nurse and all. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing place. And, you know, I've never been apart from Jack, ever. So the next day I said, I'm taking him home. They were horrified. They said, no, Jill, you can't. He's got to stay here longer. I said, I know what this dog wants. I know my dog. You know, I brought him home, and he literally jumped out of the car, you know, all bandaged up, and ran over, like hopped over to the other dogs. They were so, his tail was wagging. They were so happy to see him. They missed their brother so much. He ran up to the stalls, you know, literally hopping up to the stalls to sniff the horses. And, you know, I was watching the whole interaction. If this were with people, you know, and human beings, and heaven forbid, you know, one of our loved ones came home and had to have a limb amputated, you know, we would embrace people. We would love people. We'd be so happy to see them. But you would definitely be looking down, looking at them. And with animals, it's not about like, oh, he's missing a leg. They were just so happy to see him. They didn't care about anything. I mean, they could smell the medicine. They could smell the procedure, you know, and dogs with their noses. But it wasn't like they were afraid of what he looked like or he was different. They just were so happy to see him. And at that moment, my life changed because I learned so much from Jack. A, his resilience. The fact that 24 hours after losing a limb, he could be hopping around with a wagging tail. B, the response from the other animals, that there's no prejudice in the physical difference, right? And C, just wanting to live the best life, even regardless of the loss of a limb. And, you know, I chronicled Jack's story on the Today Show. I waited till the last chemotherapy treatment because I was superstitious. I wanted to make sure everything was okay. Meredith Vieira was crying. I got emails from all over the world. This little German shepherd that I found, you know, abandoned on the side of the road, touched people all the way to Brazil. It was the most incredible thing. And it was that day, Duncan, I went into my boss and I said, you know what? Stars don't need my help. Animals do. And he said, okay, great. Be our pet reporter. And I said, well, I don't want to be a pet reporter because I want to do stories that have a little bit more impact and meaning than just like, you know, Muffy getting a little, you know, pedicure.
Or a sweater or whatever.
And going, you know, with mommy shopping. I said, I really want to do stories that will make a difference for animals. And he said, great. So I gave myself my own title, Animal Advocate. And I started Bow to Wow, which is our award-winning series.
For sure.
100% success record, adoption record, and I go to a very, you know, upsetting shelter, not one of the greatest shelters in the country, but I go there for that reason, to get animals out and to also show people, you know, if you think that you can't find the greatest animal in the world, think again. Go to your local shelter. You can find anything, any breed, any kind, anything you're looking for, but most importantly, with the best heart and soul, because they know they've been saved.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, that was the beginning of my switch into animal advocacy, and every story I do, I think of it as a gift for me.
For sure.
You know, that I'm able to do it and shine a light. And I think we are coming. We have, with every baby steps we take, and I, even though I'm reaching millions of people, it's still baby steps. I also feel that we have such a long way to go, but I do see a difference in awareness. I know that all my well-known friends or celebrity friends years ago, you know, mm-hmm. were probably more apt to go to a breeder or whatever, and now they know that they, and I have helped with this, they have a responsibility to go to a shelter. And I tell people, you know what, you have a responsibility to save a life. You're in the public eye, and you need to show people that this is what you need to do so that everybody ultimately will go to a shelter and get a wonderful animal.
Absolutely. Well, Jill, you raised a bunch of really interesting things there. I want to delve into some in a moment. I just want to let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Jill Rappaport, who reports on all sorts of animal welfare issues for the Today Show. If you'd like to ask Jill a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So just backing up a moment, Jill, when you decided to share Jack's illness on Today, did you grapple with how much of his story and really your story you were comfortable sharing on the air, or was it pretty natural, like, hey, I think this could really help people, and so I'm just going to go for it? Or,
well, you know, there's that fine line, even with all my rescue stories, and I've really covered some pretty horrific situations. We had one story with 168 racehorses that were left for death upstate New York, living off rainwater and wood for survival. And the condition, you can just imagine. Those images will be seared in my mind for the rest of my life. But, you know, with television and with even I watched some of the ASPCA commercials, and, you know, I am their Goodwill Equine Welfare Ambassador. But even some of those commercials are even too painful for me to watch. And I'm come from a different situation where I feel like the best way to educate people, to draw them in and make them realize they need to help, is you have to let people know the situation, but without blinding them with images that are too painful to watch, because what people will do, including myself, is turn the channel because it's, oh my goodness, I can't look at that.
Yeah.
Well, I get that, but there's the fine line of letting them know this is happening, but also having that light at the end of the tunnel so that they can understand that with that painful image, oh my goodness, look at the puppy now, or look at the dog now, so that they know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. So with the Jack story, you know, clearly we didn't show the procedure or anything like that. We know we saw him on three legs, but we saw him once he was up and around and without the bandages. And with the chemotherapy, we didn't show, we showed the procedure of him having chemotherapy. It was just a needle. It was a drip, you know?
Yeah.
So, and he was just sitting there with his tail wagging.
Sure.
So everything we showed was definitely something that people could handle in the morning. I mean, they know what he was doing. But the good news was the dog was licking his lips and wagging his tail and kissing the nurses.
Right.
So, you know, he was on his road to recovery. And Jack lived over 2 years, which is, you know, they said for a German Shepherd, he lived till 13 and a half, and that would be a great life. I mean, it's never enough time. If he would have lived till 40, it wouldn't have been enough time for me.
Sure.
But for a big German Shepherd, 13 and a half years old, you know, is considered a good number, and yet that was a number he lived till with cancer.
Right.
So I got 2 extra years with Jack.
Yeah.
And those 2 years, we wrote the book, Jack and Jill. I say we because Jack was my co-author.
Sure.
And Jack and Jill, a miracle, you know, just a miracle dog with a happy tail, T-A-I-L, to tell. And it was a children's book. It's still out. It's been in schools. It taught children about loss and love in a very gentle way with real photographs of Jack, you know, frolicking on the lawn with the other dogs and the horses. And so Jack's message, he was the ambassador dog of hope for animal cancer, for Tales of Hope, .org, that I still benefit them today with my leash and collar line. So Jack, in those 2 years, changed so many people's lives, gave out, literally touched people in a way that the awareness factor just went through the roof on what you can do for your pets and how much more you can do to save their life and give them a chance. And you know what? You're your pet's advocate. You are their voice. And you know what is best for them. And I knew, just like the vet knew, that Jack wanted to be here for a lot longer. He wasn't ready to say goodbye. He had so much life in him. And if I didn't think it was the right thing for him, or if it was a situation that wouldn't have been right, we wouldn't have gone in that direction. But Jack wanted to live, and he did.
Yeah.
And that's what our animals teach us. They, you know, and I've been in situations, I've, you know, lost three dogs. And you know when they're so sick, and, you know, they tell you.
Yeah.
And when you're just at some point keeping them alive for yourself, you know, you have to be able to, and it's the hardest decision anybody ever can make. But, you know, I had one dog, he lived till 20 years old, my Hampton. And but at the end, you know, I really was keeping him alive for me. I couldn't bear to let go, and he had no quality of life at that point. Jack had the greatest quality of life until his last breath. He really did.
Yeah.
And he was living his life till the last breath. You know, it wasn't like he was couldn't walk or,
right,
you know, couldn't eat. I mean, he really, really, really had a great life those 2 years. So,
and
I just think that's the important message. And they teach us so much. Animals are amazing what they can teach us. And I learn every day from my 5 rescues I have laying on my bed right now.
Well, I hope to meet them in a moment, too. But yeah, it sounds like really, even from the moment, at least briefly after his procedure, he let you know, like, hey, let's get out of here. I want to get back to home and the other dogs. And so, yeah, that will... to live was sort of, you know, almost instantly apparent, even after a procedure that for a lot of dogs...
Well, you can see in the piece, I mean, he's pulling me out the door, And, you know, most dogs on 3 legs and just having a chemotherapy treatment, I'm running down the hall with him, like he's pulling me. And they were all laughing because he was like, you know, he loved Dr. Post, but let's be honest, you know, I don't know any dog that's really thrilled to go to the vet, even for... the normal routine stuff. My lab, who's lying next to me now, and he's 90 pounds. My lab, he's 12 now. When he goes to the vet, you know, I used to, at one point, when Jack was getting treatments, I would actually have the vet come to my home to check on Jack, because I wasn't going to put him in the car, and, you know, except for the chemotherapy where I had to go somewhere. The just minor checkups, or if he needed something, I would bring the vet to my home, my farm, make it easier and less stressful for him. And I thought, well, while she's here, she can check out the others. Well, now I take them, and it's only a mile away, but I'll take my lab in, and I bring him into the room, and he literally, there's a tiny little bench I'm sitting on, and he tries to squeeze that 90-pound lab body behind me, where just his back end is sticking out and his head. And I look at him, I go, do you think they can't see you? Like, he's hoping the vet won't see him so he won't be examined. He's hiding from the vet, and he's 90 pounds, and I'm going... Buckaroo, you really think
nice
they can't
try.
See you? And he's like, oh, well, maybe if I hide behind my mom, no one's going to see me and I won't have to get examined. I mean, they're so funny, but they're you know, it's scary. They smell medicine. They, you know, they get nervous even to get their nails cut. So, you know, I tried not to, with Jack, you know, stress him out, but he had so much life and joy. And my favorite moments was he would go out in the grass in the sun, and he would roll around on his back and just rub his back into the grass, into the sunlight, you know. And he really had a beautiful life. And to see him enjoy that life after what he went through, that was the best feeling. You can't even put a price on a feeling like that.
For sure.
Knowing your animals, because when they feel good, you feel good. And when they're hurting, you hurt.
Yeah.
And so I definitely think I did the right thing with him, and his story, his message will live on forever through the book, you know, through his, you know, he's still the ambassador of hope for Tales of Hope, just doing his work from heaven now.
Right. Well, even today, right at this moment, you're talking about Jack, and I think that's still an important story to share, and his spirit really, I think, is affecting people as we speak. So
exactly, he's an amazing animal.
Yeah. So Jill, it sounds like really between the first book and the whole experience with Jack, really kind of both sort of pivotal turning points, really, in your career, as you described. You went to the brass at the Today Show and said, this is what I want to do instead. And so that's pretty much what you've done. So now, I mean, you've won all these awards, and you've, of course, helped adopt out countless animals. What I'm wondering about in the years since really effectively reinventing your career, you've had all these amazing triumphs and helped so many animals get adopted and shined a light on all these different organizations and issues. But at the same time, you obviously can't possibly cover anywhere near everything you'd like to that's worthy, at least until they launch the 24-hour Jill Rappaport channel.
So that's a good idea. How about you? We can do that together.
I like it. I'm happy to jump right in. But meanwhile, how do you choose like the organization Jill Spotlight, or what's the criteria to zero in with just a certain amount of airtime and obviously so many animals and organizations and issues that need that kind of attention?
Well, that's my biggest frustration because, you know, I have a list, and I'm pitching 24/7. In fact, right before we started this interview, I just heard about another story. And, you know, what I've tried to do is reach out to every tentacle at NBC and, mm-hmm. and tell them I'm available to do any show, any time, at any hour of the day. You know, if you want this story, if one show didn't want one story, I'll pitch it somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, I will do that all the time because if I believe in a story, I will fight for it, you know, 24/7. And I'm known where some producers have even had to say to me, you need to take no for an answer. You know, with celebrities, it was different. You know, it's like, okay, you don't want that, fine, you do, great. But with this, it's so hard because I feel so strongly about this. Mm-hmm. I will wake up at all hours of the night worrying about a story I just read about. I just heard about another situation in a shelter that just kept me up all last night.
Mm.
You know, when it's your life, it's your life, and
yeah.
you don't take a break from it. It's like I said earlier, it's like oxygen for me.
Yeah.
So I fight very hard. I am a committed person at NBC where I, you know, some of these producers, they know when they see the
uh-oh, here comes
in.
Jill, right?
Yeah. And they either pop an Excedrin.
That's
they
funny.
They take their little aspirin before they pick up the phone, or they're, listen, the good news is, and I have to tell you, I have so many producers that embrace these stories and feel the same way I do. And I have to say, I just got, you know, the most amazing break. A year ago, my first piece for NBC Nightly News was on the Sandy animals after, you know, the Sandy
mm-hmm.
horrific, you know, hurricane and superstorm. And so many animals were left displaced. And one of the stories I did was the reuniting of the Sandy pets with their animals, and I mean, with their owners. And what was amazing, these owners had literally, Duncan, the shirt on their back. That was all they were left with.
Yeah.
And the joy of being reunited with their pet, regardless that they didn't have a home, a car, a place to go, it all just went by the wayside once they looked into the eyes of their beloved pet.
Mm-hmm.
And that story was incredible. And I also did the first, I broke the story, Xena, the warrior puppy, which she started to have a whole following on Facebook. It's about this little puppy that was left for death, less than 1% chance to live. And the shelter took her in, nurtured her back to health. And when she got adopted into this family, it was the most beautiful story because she went to a family where the little boy has autism, and now she has become the savior for the little boy.
Oh.
And he talks, he sings, he communicates with her. And I did that story for Nightly News. It went viral to 52 countries.
Wow.
And then just last month, I did a story on a photographer out in California who only photographs senior pets, you know, elderly pets
mm-hmm.
and shelters in the hopes of getting them adopted, does really beautiful photographs.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most commented viewed pieces in the history of Nightly News.
Wow.
So I feel like even though I've been at NBC 22 years, just now this new elevation to be able to do work for NBC Nightly News and the weekend show with Lester Holt, which I, you know, I just feel like I've graduated and gotten into Harvard because they're allowing me to do the stories that I feel so passionate about, and they have said yes to them, and I'm getting ready to go on the road to do 5 more. They're all exclusive, so you'll be hearing and seeing about them. I'm so excited. So I have wonderful people who share our passion for animals and get it.
No, that's so cool because one of the things as you're describing this obviously, as we've established, you've had a lifelong passion in this regard, but it's been really interesting in the last handful of years or so, maybe a little further back than that, to see that really across all kind of media, online, old school media, you know, even what's left of newspapers, I mean, there are animal stories all the time. I mean,
yeah,
any
the ones that rate the most. You know, everyone says, oh, because I now, if you go to todayshow.com and you go to the pet section, it'll have all the categories across the top and then my name. I have my own whole section of all my stories.
Sure.
And I remember when I pitched my makeover for Mutts idea, which is from bow to wow,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Anacoth producer said, I love it. And, you know, it's not that I reinvented the wheel, but I did it in a way where people had never seen it before. And it's we're going into our sixth year. I do it once a month where we go to that shelter on 110th Street in New York and bring out dogs, you know, and many, when I say makeover, you know, the short hair ones, you're not going to see a huge difference. But some of these dogs, the hair matted down, they were abandoned, left on the street, and just looked, you know, so sad. And
yeah.
we take them to the groomer, clean them up, and you can see someone like Michael Phelps walking them out or Donald Trump. And by the way, Michael Phelps did take one of my Bow to Wow dogs.
Oh.
He rescued one. I mean, we've had two Olympic gold medalists take my dogs.
Nice.
And, yeah, no, it's great. And so to see the transformation, and what's amazing to me, you know, now we see so many adoption segments on all these shows. Everybody's
yeah.
jumped on the adoption bandwagon, thank goodness. And, you know, they say imitation is the best, finest form of flattery. And
for sure.
My attitude is great. Bring it on. Copy it all you want, because if it raises awareness, I can't even tell you how many of my famous friends that I've made over the years who have asked me, you know, I really want a dog. I'm really looking for a family dog. And one friend even said to me, here, look at this puppy. It was from a breeder. And I looked at her. I said, do you know what I do for a living? Do you have any? Are you kidding me? And not that I'm sure the breeder is very nice and reputable. I don't want to say that, okay, because I'm sure there's a lot of wonderful, nice breeders out there. However, I am the shelter person. And she said, you'll never find what I'm looking for in a shelter.
Mm.
And I said, just tell me what you want and give me, you know, some
yeah.
time. She sent me an email of exactly the specifications. You know, listen, and some people, I don't fault anybody. People have breeds they love. They
yeah.
have ages they want, you know, a male, a female. Listen, whatever, as long as you go to a shelter, I don't care. But, you know, I think some people are still under the misconception that, you know, that shelter animals are second-class citizens. And the only difference between a shelter dog, cat, and a Westminster winner is their situation. They ended up in a bad situation. But you have the same heart, soul, wonderful breeder, dogs, beautiful animals, loving animals. You know, their situation was not as fortunate as
yeah.
a show dog. You know, they were
right.
given up. They were dumped. Maybe people lost, you know, their homes, their money, couldn't handle them anymore. You know, that is the situation. But then the plus side, the upside of a shelter pet, they know when you've saved them.
Yeah.
Because they know that they were taken from a really horrific, frightening place and brought into the land of love. And they thank you every day for it. And I say that I'm the one that's been rescued by my rescues.
For sure.
Because they've given me such a beautiful life. They've saved me. And that's why I even named my leash and collar line, you know, Jill Rappaport's Rescued Me Collection.
Right.
I'm the one that's been
It goes
rescued.
Both ways, for
oh,
sure.
absolutely. And anybody who's rescued, I think, agrees with that.
Absolutely. Well, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Jill Rappaport, who covers animal welfare issues and promotes adoption and is an animal advocate, et cetera, for the Today Show and NBC News. We invite you, we just have maybe a minute or so left at the most, but if you want to quickly get in on this, it's 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Gosh, there's so many things I'm hoping to cram in. Well, one thing too, let's go back to Bow to Wow, just because some questions I was going to ask overlap some of the emails that we're just never going to get to all the emails, unfortunately. But I guess the key question, which to me is a bit rhetorical, but I think it's so cool to have you answer. So tell for people who maybe aren't as familiar with it that are listening, tell just briefly about what Bow to Wow involves, and then tell like how many animals, or at least what percentage of animals, have been adopted through that segment.
Oh, well, the Bow to Wow, you know, is the monthly where I go, and I take dogs and cats, and we try to do all ages. I mean, I've had them up to 10 years old. We've had blind dogs. We've had animals on three legs, deaf animals, and every single one gets adopted immediately. The minute I'm off the air, the phones are ringing off the hook at the Today Show. Like, the front desk is like, oh, the phones don't stop ringing. The emails are flooded. I've had people actually grab me on the way in, audience members, because, you know, I do it outside in the promenade with everybody around, and they say, oh, I need to get that dog. I heard that there's all these requests for that dog already, and you've been off the air 30 seconds. And I look, at this one woman, and I said, if you don't get this animal, you know, which I understand you want this dog, do you understand how many more there are and how many incredible animals there are in shelters all across the city and every city across the United States? So my message to people, please give a shelter pet a chance. I promise you it'll be the best gift you could ever give to them and to yourself. And we have a 100% adoption record. And I really believe because I've shined a light on these animals in a way that no one ever has, and it's something about once they're on TV, everybody wants them. Well, mm-hmm. Can you imagine if we would just shine a light locally? There's so much people can do to make a difference locally.
Yeah, sure.
You know, volunteer to walk, go in, spend time with the animal. They need to be socialized. You know, sometimes they don't even get out maybe once a day in their cages because, you know, they're short-staffed and the funding. I just want people to understand that this is so important. These animals need a chance, and so many. Right now, Duncan, there are over 7 million companion pets. When I say companion, animals that would be wonderful at-home pets for you right now,
mm-hmm.
in shelters across the country. Half will never make it out.
Right.
And it's not because they're not, you know, there are some animals that are aggressive and sick, surely. I'm talking wonderful, healthy, beautiful animals that will never make it out because they just will not be able to find a home. And that's why people need to understand, get to your local shelters now, make a difference, do something, you know, whether it be just taking them for a walk, donating your time, donating money, or most important, rescuing, taking one home, giving one a beautiful home.
Absolutely. Well, because the thing to keep in mind regarding the Bow to Wow is that for all those 7 million animals that you're referring to, a very small percentage are going to end up on TV with Jill Rappaport. But I mean,
although
there's counterparts to all those wonderful animals of all different kinds and stripes, and they're there. And just back to what you were touching on before, I mean, whatever animal or breed you want is indeed available, right?
What's funny. I did I received another award earlier in the summer, and then I was presenting one at this event, and my dear friend Bill Smith from Mainline Animal Rescue, he's truly from heaven above.
Yeah.
Thank goodness he's still on the earth. But, you know, Bill Smith broke the puppy mill story on Oprah. He did.
Right.
He literally raised awareness about puppy mill.
Sure, he's been on this show. Yeah, amazing guy.
He's incredible. Yeah. And he brought two golden retriever puppies. Now, these dogs, if you were to look at them, you would think, oh, my goodness, from the finest breeder in the world. You know, they look like they could be Westminster winners one day. They're shelter puppies. And I said, this is also the face of shelter. You know, you can find anything, any breed, any type of dog you're looking for. I had a Dalmatian on last week we were on.
Yeah.
Out of Wow.
Yeah, he was nutty and delightful.
Oh,
yeah.
My. And people were like, oh, you can find anything. But, you know, and I understand wanting a certain breed, but I'm telling you, there is something about the psyche of these dogs, the way when you take them out of the cage, and it's such a frightening. You know, if you see me on these segments, I do the the tape piece, where I'm at the shelter, and I've only just met these animals, and they come out of the cage. Many of them have kennel cough. They're all sick because, you know, that's the situation in these city-run shelters. It's that's why we have to get them out right away.
For sure.
And they're scared, and they don't know. Many have been dumped, abandoned. You know, their situations are horrific. I pick them up in my arms, and 90% of them, if you watch my segments in the tape spot, they're kissing me. They're lying on my lap. And, you know, I don't have time ahead of time. This isn't staged. I get there. We immediately start shooting live on tape. They bring the dogs out that we've selected, you know, and many times, you know, I'll select them from a photograph and they temperament test them because we have to know, you know, that they're going to be, you know, safe, sweet animals. We have to go through extensive temperament testing. But the truth is, I'm meeting them for the first time and they're laying in my lap and they're looking up at my eyes. And what a testament to an animal is that? Here they've just been in the most horrific situation. I'm a stranger. They just melt in my lap, look up in my eyes as if to say, please, please, please. They know it's like they're selling themselves for the camera.
Yeah.
They're saying, please give me a chance.
Well,
and then we put them in the little adopt me box. And, you know, and the heart and soul of these animals, if people, the greatest gift I ever got, and I ended up giving it to Oprah, was a pillow. And it was a needlepoint pillow that said, be the person your dog thinks you are. Because if we could live up to their expectations, they look at us, right, Duncan?
Right.
Like we are the greatest people in the world, and we can do no wrong. And the unconditional love, I mean, really, that says it all. And
I
ended up sending that pillow to Oprah after I did her show, because it says it all about our animals. The lessons they can teach us, you can't put a price on them.
Absolutely. Well, Jill, gosh, I'm afraid we are out of time. There's so many other things I was hoping to discuss with you, and I know a lot of people had questions, emails, and calls, but we just sort of ran out of time, and we just got kind of on a cool roll here. So,
well,
thank you.
Well, let's do it again. Take calls. I would love to talk to your listeners.
All right. Well, you don't have to ask twice. I'll be in touch with you instantly about that. But meanwhile, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and again, thanks for all your amazing work over the years, which it sounds like really is expanding on broader platforms, if I may use that term, on across NBC and stuff, which is just great news for all of us who love and care about animals and want to see more and more fine homes. So thanks again.
Oh, thank you. What a great opportunity. And Duncan, you keep up your great work, and thank you for your show and what you do for animals, our fur angels. You know, without people like you, they wouldn't have a chance either. So
that's very kind.
I'm so honored to be on the show.
Thanks again, Jill. Good luck to you. Thanks again. All right, in just a moment or two, we'll speak with Stephanie Downs of the Fix-It Foundation, getting an update on an important spay-neuter-related research project they've been conducting in St. Croix. Hear this nice little instrumental in the meantime. All right, let's welcome back from the Fix-It Foundation, Stephanie Downs. Welcome back to Talking Animals, Stephanie.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. So let's jump right into it. Outline, if you would, just at least briefly, how Fix-It's sort of spay-neuter nationwide program works.
Sure, yeah. Our nationwide program is called Get Your Fix, and it's an online portal where people can connect with families in need. So something we quickly learned when we launched our organization was that there's lots of people, millions of people in this country who take in a stray animal, have a neighbor who has a litter that's going to take them to the shelter, and they want to keep them from ending up being euthanized or at a shelter. So they take them into their homes, but they're not necessarily in the best financial situation themselves. They're doing the best they can, but $100 even for a low-cost spay-neuter is a lot to them. So they post profiles on the website. Families can then go through and search through those and pick somebody to help.
Cool. So it's really, I think we talked about before, it's in a sense, it's kind of a cool matchmaking of sorts.
Exactly. It's we jokingly call it Match.com for spay and neuter. So it's a way to have a direct impact on ending pet overpopulation, because, you know, getting to the source of the problem is definitely how we're going to end, you know, the millions of animals that are being euthanized every year.
For sure. And basically, it's a great opportunity if you have a couple of spare bucks or just want to do a really good deed. You can just sort of help someone you either know a little or nothing about or a little bit about get their animal spayed or neutered. So it's really, really cool.
Yeah, I often think of it as a massive foster network out there of people who have opened their homes to an animal. The stories are often so heartwarming of that, you know, I found a kitten in the dumpster, but I'm a college student. I can feed her, and I got her vet basic vaccines, but if you could help me with a spay and neuter. So it's a way of keeping these animals in homes with good people who are trying to do the right thing.
Cool. So Stephanie, let's sort of multifaceted, Fix-It Foundation sort of multifaceted. So tell us a little bit about this case study in St. Croix.
Sure, yeah. Our other project that we're doing, because Fix-It is essentially focused on trying to break down the barriers that are keeping percentages of the population from spaying and neutering. And so we're looking at the cost aspect, like we're doing with the Get Your Fix project. And then the other thing we've been looking at is the demand aspect, as far as there are certain segments of the population who aren't spaying and neutering their animals, and why is that happening? So we wanted to do some research around messaging and incentives, and could we make certain groups interested? So we started a case study a couple of years ago on the island of St. Croix, which is a U.S. territory in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and we wanted to see. This particular island had had low-cost spay-neuter available to them for over a decade at $25, yet nobody, very, very few people were participating in it. They actually were selling about 5 vouchers a week on an island of about 50,000 people. And so we went in there and did a lot of upfront research on the perception of spay and neuter and why people were or were not doing it. And in about a year and a half, we created a 10% increase in the demand. So we consistently do over 50 surgeries a week, which is a lot for an island of 50,000 people.
For sure.
And our biggest development recently, so we've been running hard at that over the last couple of years, and we've tried all kinds of things. We've we first started out at the baseline of charging what they were being charged before, $25 a surgery. And then we started adding in incentives, and then eventually we went to free. And then our final step was, we call it the bribery phase, which was free plus incentives. Some of our more interesting promotions that we did were a free bottle of rum for every spay and neuter surgery. So for every animal they got a bottle of rum from the Caribbean rum company. And, we realized that that's maybe not a solution that people can have forever. You know, we can't maybe offer, rum for decades. But what we're doing is we're trying to create a cultural shift. We're working with communities who many people will tell us they think spay and neuter is cruel or they think it's unnatural. And what we want to do is have the children of this generation not remember that their mother got a bottle of rum, but remember that their animals were fixed. Or, somebody who gets it done, they're going to tell their neighbors, yeah, I got that done and my dog was fine. And, it just starts to create, break down some of those myths, so to speak, that we hear quite often.
And Stephanie, what were the sort of the cultural factors? I know, for example, like years and years ago, when I was sort of just starting off the show, and I talked to someone who had started a kind of a shelter / rescue, and just in like Tijuana, just over the border, and there and elsewhere, a huge sort of cultural philosophical opposition to neutering, sort of related in some way to machismo. So yeah. That's why they wouldn't get their dogs spayed if not neutered. So what sort of things were you finding in St. Croix that then you sort of understood and then helped overcome?
Sure. Well, what we learned immediately was that a lot of it was, to some extent, was just some basic barriers. Like they didn't know, like they thought it was unnatural. So we explained to them the health benefits. We also some of it was just it being inconvenient. So we immediately removed the voucher program, and we now use a code system. So they call into a call center, they get a code, and then they can use that anywhere on island. So using the vouchers was a barrier because it was another step for them. Mm. We've learned the cost is a huge, and we saw a huge increase in demand when we just eliminated the cost. And again, that's the thing where eventually maybe we'll be able to get back to charging someday in a couple of years from now. But right now we have to build the value in doing this for the animals.
And cultivate the interest. Yeah, I would think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But so many people just think, oh, all the puppies find homes. And, one of our most popular promotions is, four out of five puppies will not find a home. Mm. And, we're just being a little bit more in their face about that. This is an island where per capita, compared to the U.S. mainland populations, they put down six times the amount of animals that we do on average in the U.S. So,
wow.
We had to really get out there with the messages. But it's been all over the board. But on the machismo one, that one's what we would call more of a high-hanging fruit, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit more challenging to tackle.
Sure.
So we're working on, because we're constantly rotating through our promotions and tracking which ones work the best. We're working on getting some, military guys in a photo with their dogs, and it says, real men spay and neuter. And, we have some different kind of creative things we want to try. We're constantly checking. And what we do is, which might be a good lesson for anyone learning, is every promotion we put out has a tracking phone number on it. So we have 30 different tracking phone numbers. So if I put something on a poster that has a number, if I then take that same message and put it on, let's say, a lawn sign, has a different tracking phone number. So we're able to track not only the channel, but also the message for every single promotion that we do.
Cool. Well, Stephanie, we're sort of over our time at this point, so if you just quickly give a website address and or Facebook, and then we're going to have to, I'm afraid, move on to the NPR.
No problem. So you can find us at fixit-foundation.org, and we'd love to connect.
Great. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us again on Talking Animals and all your great work.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. All right. So this has been Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll join the NPR News in progress. Thanks.